Tricks.
Recorded
live. You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome, everybody, to episode 34 of the Geocaching Podcast. This week, we have an interview with Montu Ryder and his wife. They're going to teach us a little bit about how they teach geocaching to their youth group and other groups around them in Florida. But first, I want to welcome everybody back. Welcome back, Daryl, to the show. It's been quite a while since we've talked. We've had a few weeks off. Anything new with you guys?
Well, it's kind of nice to have the break off, but first off, let's ask how Eli's doing.
Actually, Eli is doing really well. For those of you who didn't get a chance to hear what had happened, Eli, a week ago, Monday, was feeling really, just wasn't himself, and he had a temperature, and so the doctor said to take him to the emergency room. So we did that, and after lots and lots of tests, Eli is my son, who's 7 weeks old. They found out that he had viral meningitis, which, if you don't know, is the lesser of the two evils with meningitis. You'd much rather have viral. In adults, they say most of the time it just is diagnosed like the flu, and it just basically, you just drink lots of fluids, rest, and take some Tylenol, and within 3 to 7 days, yeah, you'll be back on your feet again. But with kids like his age, he can't fight it off. And so they had to put him in the hospital, and they had to go ahead and give him fluids, and they weren't really sure what kind it was at first. So they had to give him some antivirus type stuff, whatever those are called. I can't remember what those are called. They kept him, and he was there for a week. He came home on Friday, and then Saturday I woke up. Yes, thank you, Montu Ryder. Antibiotics is the word I was looking for. On Saturday I woke up and I had a fever and I was aching all over. So I actually had it. I started to ache a little bit, the past week, but was kind of just playing it off. And then, Saturday came to the realization that I too had it. So, but I'm actually feeling good now. Today was the first day of this week that I did not have a fever at all. So that's what's going on with me. I tried to do a FTF hunt. I was going to do an FTF hunt this morning. I saw a cache pop up last night, and it was too late because I was working on a video project. Okay, it wasn't too late, but I was working on a video editing project, and so I didn't really have time to go out and get it. So I was going to put it off until this morning because I know that the FTF hunts caches around here aren't very quick at it. So I was going to do it this morning. It was still dark on my way to work, and I didn't have a flashlight in my caching bag, and so I know I need to put one there now. But I said, I'll get it later on today. And I got to work, and a girl found it, who had only found like 15 caches under their belt. So I wrote them and congratulated them on the FTF. But that's what's going on with me. What's going on with you guys?
Wow. Well, hey, you know, between the updates from Sunny and Sandy and you with your son, I ended up jumping on Twitter. And then got Dree hooked on it too, I think. So both of us are now on Twitter. It's pretty scary.
Well, it was one of those things that at first I didn't know if I wanted to do it. But then the more and more I did it, the more and more addicted I got to it. I've had my wife now say, just when you're at home, put the phone down. Because I Twitter on my phone when I'm at home. So I respect her, and I don't do it while I'm at home most of the time. But it's one of those things that if you guys don't know what it is, go check out twitter.com, twitter.com. Daryl, have you done any recent caching, anything new with you guys caching-wise?
Not really. We ended up spending this weekend on chores, which, you know, is kind of nice for a change since we've been neglecting that a little bit more than we should. But didn't get out and do anything fun. I did get to play a little bit with some of these new low-discharge NIM batteries. Have you heard anything about those yet?
No, I haven't.
What's the number one problem that you have with NIM batteries?
I don't know.
Well, the problem that most people have, including myself, is you charge the things up, and they do what's called leaking, where you lose like 10% of the charge every week. So if I go and charge up a set of NIM batteries, you know, after a little over a week, it ends up you got to recharge them again, or you put them in the device and they just don't have any power. Well, these new low discharge batteries solve that problem, and they only lose like 5%, I think it is, over the course of a year. So this is going to be great. I'm really excited about this. I'm sick of buying batteries like crazy to throw into my GPSRs. So now I'm going to have something that, you know, I'll give it a shot. I haven't actually had a chance to get them into the unit to test yet, but I like the idea of nothing but rechargeable batteries.
That is nice. Hey, one thing I forgot until just now as we were talking, speaking of new things, I don't know if everyone's realized, but this week, or last week actually, GC.com actually put out new maps. The maps are different. They had a version of these before, but they've changed them again, tweaked them kind of to how people wanted, and they also now have the preview, Google Preview, back in the Pocket Queries. So if you haven't had a chance to check those out, go make sure to go to geocaching.com and check out the maps when you search an area. Definitely very cool maps. I like them so far. I've heard different complaints, but I definitely like them. They fixed a lot of the really buggy things that were at the beginning. But that's a new thing that's happened on geocaching.com since we last talked.
Yeah, and they are so much better than the old ones had been.
Yeah, they definitely are. They definitely are more functional, more usable. I mean, I definitely like them. So with that, we are going to talk today with Montu Ryder and his wife about how they teach geocaching in Florida to students and other people there. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
All right, so I guess we've talked a little bit before with you on the show about your caching and how you cache. How did you guys come about getting into the position where you guys teach geocaching?
Oh, that's a fun story. I'll let Montu Ryder tell you that one.
Okay, we work with a youth group that's sponsored by the Seventh-day Adventist Church called Pathfinders. My mother is the director of our local club here in Newport Richey. And just like with Scouts, which this organization is very similar to, we have honors, whereas the Scouts call them merit badges, that the kids can work for. Well, a new honor came out 2 years ago now?
Yeah, I think it was.
Two or 3 years ago now, for geocaching. And normally our honors are on camping skills, orienteering, hiking, backpacking, that sort of thing. And we were over at my mother's and having lunch, and I'm seeing this on her countertop, and I'm going, geocaching, what in the world is this? Because I had never heard of it myself even at this point. And I'm reading down through it, and it's talking about a GPS. I figure, okay, this might actually be interesting. My wife and I, Jodester, tried it out. We went out with a Garmin Gecko 101.
I hate that thing.
And we found our first couple of caches, and I went back to my mother and said, you know, hey, I think the kids are really going to enjoy this. And so we taught it to our club that year, and then last school year we taught it at a West Area Campery, which is where everybody from the western central Florida area all converged. We had about 28 clubs there. And we taught about, I think it was 50 kids that weekend.
Oh, I thought it was more like 100, but...
No, that one was about 50. Then we just had the Southern Union Campery, the entire southeastern U.S., all converged on our church's campground up in High Springs, Florida. Several thousand kids were there, and we had well over 150 kids go through the course that weekend.
Basically, his mom said, if it sounds interesting to you and you think you can do it, teach the kids. So we did.
So how did you go about, getting more information? Like, where did you start? Like, that's a huge thing to get. I know it's easy to go ahead and talk to one or two people about geocaching because, you know, it's a hobby and it's something that we like. But how did you go about getting information and different tangible items that you can use as far as the teaching geocaching?
Well, the first year when we taught it to the club, we didn't have that much to go with. I basically ran through the basics with the kids when we were back at the facility where we do our, our home base, basically. Showed them how to use the GPS. I set up a couple of little Tupperware containers out in the parking lot at different corners so that they could play around with it. And then we went camping a few weeks later at a campground called Hog Island up in Citrus County. And there was like four caches there. So we took the kids, split them up into four groups. We had a couple of GPSs by that time, more than just my gecko. In fact, I think we left the gecko out of the equation that weekend.
I think we got our Rhino 120s by then.
Yeah. And we took them out and had them hunt down the caches. Now, my wife and I had gone up to Hog Island about a month prior and had found all the caches that we were going to have the kids find. But then we handed the GPS units to the kids, had them plug in the coordinates, and then we just followed along to make sure they found them. And then with the later classes, what we've done is I've gotten more material. I got in touch with a gentleman, a cacher by the name of Shimsky. He's with the Northeast Florida Geocachers Association. And he gave me a wonderful PowerPoint presentation that goes into a little bit better detail how to do your log entries, what's a travel bug, why sometimes your GPS gives you 5-foot accuracy and other times your 30-foot accuracy. And so we use that now with all of our courses. I take along a laptop computer and one of those little projectors, and we just put that up on the wall for the kids to watch. And depending upon where we're at, if there are caches nearby, we'll utilize those. If not, I'll bring along containers to set up as temporaries. In fact, I do always bring along a good collection of cache containers, everything from little, nice little devious little micros, little silver tubes, key magnet holders, film cans, clear on up to, we've got a very large container that we've used for a cache here locally, a big 81 millimeter ammo can. And then on the last course, I actually disabled one of my caches, which is actually a 35 gallon Rubbermaid container.
Ooh, that's a big one.
Yeah, that is a big one. In fact, Ice and Rye would probably get a kick out of that one. On one of his shows, he showed a cache called The Eyes Have It, and I kind of copied that scheme.
Our kids loved it.
Yeah, we let the kids actually tear into that cache to try and find the logbook. You've got the container, but then inside it are these 35 millimeter film cans. You got to find which one's got the logbook in it.
Oh,
and
man.
In that container, there is about 250 film cans.
And the cool thing about this is I'm disabled, so we kind of break it up into two parts. I do all the classwork with the kids, and he does all the legwork.
All right, so speaking of like classwork, how would I, like, if I'm going to be coming to one of your classes, if I'm a youth, I'm going to come, like, to one of your things. So you have, like, a class section. How do you exactly do it? Like, what do you do? Like, are you going to set me down and just show me the PowerPoint? Are you going to show me containers? Or, like, tell me kind of a little bit, kind of brief step-by-step how that goes.
Okay, we have all the containers, all different types of containers set up, and we say, okay, a geocache can be... What we usually do, we kind of start off, we make it fun for the kids. And we say, well, have you ever heard of it? You use multi-million-dollar military equipment to find Tupperware containers in the woods, and they all get a kick out of that. And they said, well, what in the world are you talking about? And we said, well, exactly this. And we show them the GPS unit, and we say, now, GPS is all these little satellites, and it points you in different directions for different things. And they're going to point you to where a certain thing is hidden or in the general direction. You have to use your own senses and common sense to look around and say, okay, does this look out of place or is this okay? If it looks out of place, more than likely you're going to find a geocache.
We then, you know, besides showing them that, and normally every time we've done the class, I've actually brought in at least 1 to 2 live caches. I'll disable 1 or 2 of mine so that the kids can actually see what a cache that's been out in the wilderness for months or even a year actually looks like.
They know what to expect then. They know what to find in a cache. They're like, it's not just a container. There's things in it. There's a logbook. There's trading items. There's...
if it's big enough.
Yeah, and there's geo coins and travel bugs and whatever. And then we explain to them what a travel bug is and what's proper travel bug etiquette and what you should and shouldn't put in a cache and things like that.
Yeah, we do give the kids a plenty of hands-on. We've got the GPSs laid out there, so they're able to play around with that. We've got several cache pages that we've printed out because sometimes we don't actually have internet access where we're at. In fact, the second time we taught the course, we had no internet access whatsoever where we were at. You couldn't even get a wireless air card to connect.
Luckily, we do things on the fly because we were told we were supposed to have internet access and have everything done at the time. We're like, oh, no, we can do it. They said, can you do it without internet access? And I said, sure, we can do it.
So it's got its challenges sometimes, but we come go prepared.
So tell me, do you go into some more like advanced stuff? Like, do you tell them about like GSAC or MAC caching or stuff like that, or do you just give them the basics of geocaching?
It's pretty much just the basics. You know, we do cover a little bit of it. I use both the GSAC and I use Expert GPS for loading into both my iPod and into my GPS. You know, so we do show them that. We show them maps that come up with the Expert GPS, which comes in real handy for us. And one of the things I like with that software is the fact that you can also get the topographical maps. So they're able to see a little bit better idea of the hilly terrain where the caches might be hidden. But we don't really get into that too much because everybody gets their own preferences sometimes. I've talked with some cachers who will swear by either Expert GPS or Easy GPS and others that swear by the GSAC and won't touch anything else. So I try not to influence there too much. I leave that to their own preference. Basically, what we do is primarily teach the basics. There is even an advanced honor, which we have not taught to too many of the kids simply because of the time constraints. One of the requirements there is to actually set up a cache, and they've got to monitor it for 6 months. Well, when you're dealing with kids, this program meets during the school year. So we're only meeting for about 8 to 9 months total, and so sometimes we don't always have that in the schedule to fit that one in. So we've only really taught the advanced a couple of times.
Okay. Daryl, do you have any questions for Monty Ryder? You've been kind of quiet there, just sitting back listening. Do you have any questions for him?
I had a question about what concepts the students find hardest to wrap their heads around.
One of the biggest problems they seem to not quite understand, especially because of the fact most of these kids have already gotten an experience with orienteering, is the fact that these units, the compass that's in there, doesn't work till you start moving forward. The funnest thing that I have is when I'm teaching a fresh class and I give them the GPSs, and we turn them on, we get the coordinates entered in, and then they just sit there and start spinning. They're trying to get that arrow to point forward, and it keeps pointing off to the right-hand side. And they can't seem to understand you need to move forward to get it to tell you the true direction.
There are sometimes when I wish I had my video camera to watch these kids. They're hysterical.
So basically you think the orienteering is actually kind of detrimental to their caching experience?
A little bit. You know, some of them pick it up real quick, because I do tell them up front that, you know, hey, this compass that's in this unit, unless they happen to be working with one of my 530s, this compass is not a true compass. It's based on your movement. Until you start moving forward, it's not going to be able to point you in a true direction. Once you're moving, it will point you the right way, and then you just keep going that way, and it will get you fairly near. I did get a short video, which I wish we could have figured out a way of getting it uploaded to the show, about a six-minute clip where we videotaped one of the classes that was up at High Springs. And they did pretty good on finding the first container. And then when they went after the second container, most of the kids found it. Two of the adult staff that were with one of the other clubs couldn't find it for the longest time. We were sitting there, and the kids were actually starting to crack up laughing because these two adults kept walking right past the cache. And when I set these up for these courses, I don't have the time to really set them up the way a proper cacher would set them up. And I tell the kids, these are going to be, this would be equivalent of a 1-1 or a half-half. These are very easy finds. They're practically sitting out in the open, and here these two adults are walking right past it and can't seem to find it.
Now, what do you find most rewarding about teaching these students?
The look on their face when they actually find it.
Yeah.
And how excited they get.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Jobstra on that. You know, a lot of the kids definitely get very excited about this, especially when they're finding something that the adults can't find. Realizing that, hey, this is something I can do where I'm on an even playing field with that guy. And they really get a light up on their face when they're finding something, and it's something that they can do legally rather than just going out and doing something to deface property or something like that. You know, something to keep them out of mischief. And they really do seem to love it, and that's where I really enjoy it.
And the nicest thing really is when they come back and tell you thank you, because they've really enjoyed it, and you can see it on their face that they're actually going to do it again. And it's not just something like, oh, we just did this to get an honor. No, we did this because we had fun. And that's the best thing to do when you actually get thank you for doing this.
Yeah, we've already gotten several emails and a couple letters of thanks.
From the kids.
Yeah, from the kids and their staff, from this past campery and from the West Area campery we did last year. So that helps to make it even more rewarding.
Now, do you have
to find it? Go ahead,
Ant. Oh, okay. I was just going to ask if you had a couple of words of advice for people who are maybe teaching their first class.
Patience.
Yeah, it's definitely best to start off with the classwork first. You know, go over carefully the unit. Let the kids, you know, go ahead and let the kids handle them while you're indoors. And just take your time with the kids, but also let them know, you know, hey, you're seeing here, you know, normally when we go, I do take the gecko just so they can see another model and see a difference in the way of entering things into it. I've got the club owns an E-Trex, just a basic yellow E-Trex, and then I own two Rhino 120s and two Rhino 530 HCXs. So they've got several different units that they can see differences in. Every now and then somebody will also bring in another unit. When we first taught it, we actually had somebody who brought in a Lowrance handheld that the kids were able to play around with too. And they were able to see the differences between the different models and the different brands as to entering in the coordinates and everything. You just got to take time. And especially if you do have some foreign models coming in, and by foreign I mean not normal for you to use, take the time to try and learn that thing before you take it to the kids.
And basically, you know, like I said, have a lot of patience and just give them, you know, common sense, do's and don'ts about geocaching.
Keep it simple.
All right, guys. Hey, thanks for being on our show today. I hope that you guys found this podcast interesting and something you'll be able to take and teach other people how to geocache. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put that the PowerPoint that they talked about in the link to our show notes. Our show notes are going to be at geocachingpodcast.info. You'll find them there, and you'll be able to you'll be able to download that. You'll be able to see links that we've talked about there. Remember, this show too is live, guys. If you're just listening to this on your iPod or any other sort of MP3 player, this show is live. We record it live every week, Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to be on our show, go ahead and call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525, or make sure to go to our webpage, and you'll see the other information on how to get how to get into our chat room and the benefits of being live with our chat room. Even if you don't have anything to say live on the air, you'll get a chance to type. We have a chat room type of a thing. You can type and you can talk to other people who are in here. And also, we also kind of usually do a post show type audio thing after I stop the recording. This show continues on and we get to talk. So with that, I'm going to wrap up the show. Thanks, guys, for joining us. Go out and get them, and we'll see you next Tuesday with snow caching. We're going to talk next week a little bit about how to cache in the snow. So with that, go get them, guys. See you next week.